We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. As you know, we begin every episode with a brief editorial, and I want you to know that this episode was recorded on Friday, January 20th, 2017, Inauguration Day. And we now have a new president, a new vice president, new secretaries of the various cabinets. And we have an opportunity now. Whether we voted for these candidates or we did not, maybe we didn't vote at all. But the fact of the matter is, they are the legal representatives of the country, and this is the country where we live. Now, we know that families sometimes have spats. They argue. They fight. But they're still a family, and they love each other when we get down to brass tacks. We can do the same thing if we look at the greater picture of Americans. We are Americans. We love this country that we live in. We want to make it better. We want to see it become better. We might be able to play a part, and other things might be out of our control. But we can do our best. We can't be afraid to state our opinion. But opinions are like, well, belly buttons. Everyone has one, and they all smell. Okay? But the fact is, everyone is entitled to their opinion. And sometimes we have to agree to disagree. But that's okay, because we can walk away with a handshake and our heads held high. And that's what should be our aim at this point in time. We want to build a better country, a better place for us to live in and for our children after us to live in. There are going to be changes, some easy, some difficult, some we agree with, some we won't. But that doesn't mean that the whole country has to fall apart. It's time for us to do our best to show others that we can be a great country, a country that we respect and that others respect, a country that others would like to see their countries molded on. And we can do that if we just decide to put our best foot forward as opposed to putting a fist forward. So think about it. Think about it, what happened today, and let's move on. And let's make this country a great country. Let's make it a country where on the 4th of July, we all stand together with flags raised high and hands on our hearts, thankful for the United States of America. Think about that on this day of inauguration. And that's my view.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Protect your family from fire. Make sure your home has smoke alarms in every bedroom, outside your sleeping areas, and on every level of your home, even your basement. For games and activities, go to sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
Hello and welcome back to another very special episode of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. And we are honored and very happy to be able to announce our two guests today. Neither of them really need any introduction to the fire service community. And first is Chief Alan Brunicini, known affectionately as Chief Bruno, the former chief of the Phoenix Fire Department, a longtime mentor and instructor to the fire service. And secondly, on a return visit, is Chief Dennis Rubin, former chief of DC Fire and Atlanta, also a well-known instructor and mentor, especially in the areas of leadership and training. So we are here to discuss the results of a very special conference that is held once every 10 years. It is called the Wingspread Conference. And I'm going to ask Chief Rubin if he will give us a little background of how it came about and the reason why it was chosen to be held every 10 years as opposed to on an annual basis. Chief?
Of course. Thank you so much for having myself and Chief Brunicini on with you for this great program. So we would like to start by acknowledging the work that you're doing, Steve, and all that implies with the various programs helping the fire service. Now, with that said, the Johnson Foundation is an organization that was created by Johnson Wax to do philanthropic type services for First America and then essentially for the entire world. Johnson calls together Wingspread conferences on a regular basis that deals with associated problems in all societies, whether it's dealing with clean water, whether it's a public health initiative. I know that they're working on another educational issue currently, or the fire service. That's the business that Johnson Foundation is in. So in 1966, the Johnson Foundation called together 12 folks to discuss the fire-related problems in the United States. That was becoming quite an important topic. There was a lot of fire deaths, probably close to about 11,000 people in our nation were dying every year. The cost of fire was just exponential. And programs like the Bronx Burning would be an example of some of the things that were happening in our society. Those 12 folks spent a couple of days in February in Racine, Wisconsin, which is the home of the Johnson Foundation, to work specifically on all of the fire-related problems back in 1966. One of the tenets that developed from that is that the significant statements that affect America as in terms of fire protection, and it has expanded to emergency medical and disaster responses, but that the meeting would be held in a 10-year cycle, given enough time to be able to make progress on the significant statements and to have the opportunity to come forth and talk about what the next 10 years have looked like. So, of course, for the past six meetings or 50 years, that's the schedule that we've been on. The Johnson mission statement is pretty simple and straightforward. It is to be a catalyst for positive and lasting change leading to a healthier environment and to healthier communities. So that was sort of the focus, that was the purpose, that was the intention of putting all of that together to get us to today. Chief Brunicini was the chairman of the past three Wingspreads, or chairperson, let me use it in the right vernacular, of the past three Wingspread programs, and has led us in a very effective way, I think, to put forth a document from each of those experiences that have had just simply put national impact.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. And thank you for your kind words. Those are sincerely appreciated. How are the representatives to the conference selected from departments around the country?
again, if you don't mind, I think I'd like to take that one as well. Chief Brunicini has built a pretty effective, what I'm going to describe as ad hoc committee. And that is myself and him, and most recently, Chief Wayne Powell, retired from the National Fire Academy family, has joined the group. And we take care of all of the necessary logistics, who should be invited to represent which organizations and why, in a very broad attempt to make sure every aspect of the fire service gets invited. Some people do get their feelings hurt. However, if the folks, your readership or listenership, would keep in mind that in 1966, there were 10 individuals, I believe, that attended. And this past one, we had 43 folks representative. We would like to have everybody in the fire service, but even at 43 folks, it was very difficult at best to be able to manage. So it's a fairly small group that makes the selection based on the leadership of the times and representative of various agencies, the International Fire Chiefs, Women in the Fire Service, I guess they're now the I Women, Black Progressive Firefighters. I'm trying to think of some of the groups, National Volunteer Fire Council, how could I forget them? All of those various groups had pretty strong and well-placed representatives that were in the room that day, Steve.
That's great to hear, because I think that's probably one of the key questions that listeners are going to ask is, well, how come my department wasn't represented, or they didn't receive an invitation? And I was going
to
say,
they were represented. They need to understand what the process is. And I don't think, and I'm going to ask Chief Brunicini to weigh in, but I don't think there was a single group that we didn't explore, making certain that they had some direct representative there. The federal government was there. We had folks from aviation community, emergency medical services were very well represented. We had the union, we had the international chiefs, and I could go on, but everybody was represented. And to, I think, move anything forward but saying that would just not be appropriate. Chief, do you want to add anything?
Well, I think not only were they represented, but they behaved exactly like we did in a fire station. It was very robust. There was a lot of disagreement. There were a lot of different opinions. The people are not bashful about how they represent their opinion and the way they interact with each other, although they interacted very, very well. But it's a very energetic process, and it's a little bit, and we laughed about it, just like herding cats. And then you're trying to get them as you go through the process to try to you get it down to where you'd like to report on it. So you got to kind of come to some kind of a general agreement in the thing. But it's a pretty interesting, and let me use the word again, it's a very robust process. It's not nice and neat. In other words, you get 40 people from the fire service in one place. And let them interact, and you're gonna get a lot of energy. You're gonna get a lot of ideas, and that's exactly what we wanted it to do. And everybody did that very well.
I think that's great.
And Steve, let me correct myself. I said that it was about 10. It was exactly 11 folks were at that first meeting. And what I'm trying to share under the chief's guidance, expanding it to 43, that allowed us to embrace groups that were involved in academia. There's another area that comes to mind. We had quite a wide breadth. Small fire departments, large fire departments, middle-sized fire departments represented by the 43 folks. So everybody listening to us or who does any studying at all with Wingspread would recognize that their interests were pretty well represented.
That's great. And what Chief Bruno just said, if we know how it is if you have four or five firefighters sitting in the firehouse at the table talking about a topic, and if they can't get along, they get very robust in their discussions as well. So now put 43 fire personnel and the outsiders who came in to be part of this. And I can certainly understand what it must have been like. And I think everybody does know now that they, after hearing these explanations, that every fire service, every EMS service, the federal branches, everybody was well represented for the necessity of bringing their input to the Wingspread conference, and have been as the numbers of invitees has grown over the years. Now, instead of going to individual incidents that were addressed over the past 50 years. How about some of the major improvements that the Wingspread Conference has provided through everyone working together towards this new goal?
Well, I think it not only identifies new areas, and there are always a few of those, but I think our service is very continuous and linear, let me say. So a lot of what the discussion is what is the next chapter, the next adventure, the next area of opportunity to improve those areas. And if you look at the table of contents, and if you look at the overview of it, it's a pretty wide-ranging inventory of the things that we routinely and especially do in the fire service. It has, from the very beginning, it's talked about the prevention part of what we do. It's talked about the whole fire protection cycle that we have. It's engaged in the original history of the project with things like incident command and safety and health and welfare and public education and special operations. And those are topics. There's nothing in it revolutionary. I think what it is, it's very evolutionary because it's a practical kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's not clearly, there's a lot of brainstorming that goes on, but necessarily it's sort of what is the vision of this group of people for the next 10 years and what are the opportunities in it for the service?
I think we also
see... Is that about right, Dennis?
Chief, it is. I thought your comments and answers were exactly on point. However, I think Steve opened up by what incidents did we review. Keep in mind what Chief said, and it was that broad overview that Chief Brunicini spoke to. In other words, we did not take a look at the Metro Rail crash in Washington, D.C. in 2009. That was not our purpose. We did not take a look at tactics. Again, not our purpose, not our direction. Where we're headed with the new strategy and tactics with resetting the fire and what's happening in the world of understanding how operationally we impact fires. Again, not the intention. This was the very broadest view. If you're familiar with a five-year strategic plan, Steve, this was a 10-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
So we took a look at 14 major significant topics during the event. And the first one starts off in the broadest sense of talking about violence. How will we respond to violence that occurs internally and externally? For instance, when we go to situations that involve mass shootings or active shooters, and then what do we have to do to prepare ourselves to be ready when there are situations like occurred on September 11th, 2001. And then it even goes to speak a little bit about sometimes the issues that are confronted by fire departments internally. So it was a lot more about the broad brush picture of where we're at now, where we're headed over the next 10 years. And it wasn't a whole lot of tactics, really wasn't any, or doing incident reviews. I think Chief's comments were just exactly on track.
Well, I didn't. That's what I'm sorry if I misspoke. I was saying that I didn't want to go over individual elements. Rather, I was wondering what was some of the over the years, some of the great strides that were results of the conference. Were there great improvements that you've seen in the way we want to look at issues? Because I imagine that over the 10 years. So much in our society changes. We don't even have to wait 10 years. It happens almost day by day in today's society. But so many things change over those 10 years that some of the issues that you have to talk about at the next Wingspread 10 years from now weren't even thought of this past July at the conference. And so you look to address new issues. As you just said, you talked about the active shooter. This was something that's relatively new for the fire service. And we've never really had to think of that until several years ago.
Absolutely right.
If you think about it, the original Wingspread was, 50 years ago?
Yes, sir. 1966, Chief.
I was there. Now, I mean, I wasn't a wing spread, but I'd been in the fire service for 10 years then. Mm-hmm. We never used the word terrorism. Right. I never heard that word. Well, during the evolution of all the wing spreads, terrorism has become a huge initiative and issue and problem and focus and challenge and so on for us. In the beginning, one of the places it started was in wing spread was the fire administration. In other words, the federal focus on fire affairs. Mm-hmm. The National Fire Academy was an original discussion in wing spread. Now, again, and this is kind of what I said before, it's not because I said it, it's just the way it is. There's a lot of things that we start, and then they just keep going. So it isn't as if once you start them, the issue goes away. In other words, you have a current set of issues, a current set of dynamics. There's things that are banging into it. There's opportunities. There's threats. There's failures. There's all the things that happen in programs, and that's a place where you can at least begin to keep track of those and historically maybe see the history of them to see what is, and really the focus is what's next. Right. What are we going to do next with these areas in the process?
Yeah, and that's very important. And I think what we're going to do is when we get to the second segment of the show, we're going to ask for some of that information that of the summaries that came out of the wing spread. But I'm going to ask to pry just a little bit for our listeners. And could you just tell us one or two topics that generated some of that robust discussion?
That came out of the first wing?
No,
spread,
this one.
Would you like the topics out of the current one?
The current one.
As I mentioned, the very first one dealt specifically with all types of violence that impacts the fire service. The second significant statement is that we recognize the fire service is the guardians of life safety, and that the United States Fire and Emergency Services must accept, embrace, and adapt change to continue to define current and best operational practices. We have to be competitive and sustainable in a changing environment, and agencies must change rather than be reactionary. So that speaks to all of the changes that we're up against, taking a look at things like best practices, for us to be a champion of the research that's going on. And then, of course, the research, the next step is to figure out the best ways to provide that research. So under that umbrella would fall all of the activities that's occurring with the work that's being done to prevent the flashover, to make us a lot smarter when it comes to work that's done in Underwriter Laboratory to better understand operational issues. So that would be an example of another one, Steve.
That's good. That's excellent. And I think part of the challenge that I see is in our industry, as we know, that a lot of the firefighters are often resistant to change. They like it the old way. They like it the way they first learned it, and they don't see any need to change that. And I think, as Chief Bruno just said, that instead of being revolutionary, we need to be evolutionary and show that it's not a hard and fast black and white kind of change, but it has to be the evolution of the services that we provide and an evolution of how we provide those services as well. Okay. I think we're going to come up on our first break, and we'll be back right after a few words. Stay tuned. We'll have more coming up from Chief Bruno and Chief Rubin on this past summer's Wing Spread 6 conference. We'll be right back. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.firehousetribune.com. for firehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Yeah, you, it's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa, what happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Make sure your home has smoke alarms in every bedroom, outside your sleeping areas, and on every level of your home, even your basement.
Brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
And we're back with the second segment of our very special podcast, Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And I think, speaking of news and issues for us, we have, again, as our guests, Chief Alan Brunicini and Chief Dennis Rubin, who are telling us about the Wingspread 6 conference that was held this past summer up in Wisconsin. It is the sixth conference. The first one occurred in 1966, and they are held every 10 years. And if you want to know why, you got to go back and listen to that first segment again, because both chiefs gave us an excellent explanation of why it's done on the 10-year basis. And Chief Brunicini, I want to ask you now, word is out that the results of the conference are going to be released on the internet very soon.
Yes.
And
it'll be on the internet. There are some, and Dennis needs to remind me of this. There are a few, some hard copies that are going out, mostly to organizations, aren't they, Dennis?
Yes, sir. With the kind support of VFIS, 1,000 paper copies were made. I think that only equals two trees, Chief. With that, about 500. Were directed to folks that we would call dignitaries, the attendees, for instance, the heads of the various associations and agencies, federal government folks, all of the executive staff members of the Johnson Foundation. And then the second 500 are held back to be shipped out by request. The fire, I've got to work towards getting this exactly right. The National Fire Heritage Foundation, I'm sorry, National Fire Heritage Center, has taken on the responsibility to mail out those first 500 copies and to stand ready to mail out the next 500 upon request at no charge. And they can be reached at www.thenfch. That's the NFHC, I hope I said it right, .org, their initials, National Fire Heritage Center. And if you'll send them the information, our listeners, as to where they'd like to have it shipped for free, no charge for shipping or postage, no charge for the document, the first 500 people that ask can have their own copies.
Well, that's great. And I think we should publicly thank the VFIS and the National Fire Heritage Center for their support and taking on the workload to get these out, because as we've said all along now in this broadcast, that it is a very important report that as many of us in the fire service, both active and retired, should read to see where the fire service is and where we may be going for the next 10 years. So,
boy, isn't that the truth? And if you don't mind me being rude once again,
not at all,
I
sir.
Would just need to cover the other sponsors. Can I just take a second?
Please do.
To talk about, thank you. VFIS was clearly our title sponsor and was so benevolent, providing the resources to do the work. Along with them, so was Columbia Southern University, Fiero, which is the Fire Industry Education Resource Organization.
Bless you.
The Germantown, Wisconsin Fire Department helped us with facilities. The Institution of Fire Engineers, the U.S. branch, the National Heritage Fire, or the National Fire Heritage Center, I keep making that mistake, acknowledge them once again, the National Fire Sprinkler Association, and the Racine Fire Department. So with that said, there were 8 different groups that provided the financial resources and wherewithal for the 43 people to come together for a 3-day conference to put together the document that's now being circulated.
And having it up in Racine, it's a beautiful area. I worked up just a little out of the way there in Appleton for 10 years during the fall season. And I imagine the summer must have been very nice up there for everyone to get up there and enjoy the beauty of the nature up there, and maybe cooler temperatures than what we were having here in the rest of the country. So,
I'm going to be a little out of school once again, and I know I'm running my mouth too much, but a quick story. I met Chief Brunicini in Green Bay, Wisconsin, at the first part of August a year or two ago. And when Chief got off the airplane to say hello, he didn't say hello, or we didn't shake hands or embrace. Chief, do you remember what you asked for?
Get a coat.
Get me a coat.
So, Where's the coat?
And truly, it was in the 40s. It was a cloudy day. The wind was about 10 or 15 miles an hour, so you can figure out the rest. Hence, we very strategically, we knew we were headed to Racine, and we picked the month that we felt like would be as close to summer weather. And my goodness, it was 80 degrees, sunny each and every day. The facility is actually on the shore of Lake Michigan. The lake was just calm. There's a lighthouse on the property that overlooks the lake. Just absolutely an amazing 3 days in, I guess that would be South Central Wisconsin.
Well, that's wonderful, because I think when you have that kind of area around you, it gives you more chance to think, to dedicate yourself to what you're there for in the first place, is that you're not worrying about what's going on outside. You're able to dedicate and focus your attention on the project at hand. So with that said, and again, hopefully I'll, at the end of the show, I will also include another thanks to all the people who helped out with the conference. Let us talk then, please, about some of the resolutions or what the conference came up with as some of their decisions for looking at. I know we started with the first one was the violence. What else is being addressed in this report?
I'm pausing. I've got the book in front of me as a refresher, and I didn't know if Chief Brunicini wanted to add. But we take a look at things like occupational disease, what's happening in our industry as it relates to things like the cancer, firefighters' disease, health, fitness, and wellness in a very broad sense. We had an outstanding person in the likes of Dr. James Augustine that took us through about a half century's worth of what has occurred on the medical scene to extend life, not just for firefighters, but for everyone, and how we can have some impactful opportunities to improve firefighters' health. Another presentation was by the CEO and chair of VFIS, and we talked about finances as well as the economy, not just the economy in our nation. But he put on a presentation that was second to none that talked about the global economy and what impacts that it's going to have. And I would just start off by saying, Steve, those are the types of broad issues that really generated a lot of great discussion. Some cases, it was dissenting opinions, but it allowed us to vet out, if you will, what I think is going to be a remarkable report. Chief, did I say that well enough?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the new areas, and I think, help me with this, Dennis, but I think this is the first year that Wingspread has talked about behavioral health with firefighters.
Absolutely, Chief. Absolutely.
And I think
was.
That's kind of a current, kind of, it is a current topic, I think, in our service today. Certainly as a, let me say, it certainly isn't new, but I think us addressing it is pretty recent. I think another really sad reality in our system was the occasion of firefighter suicides. We had a lengthy discussion there when we spread about that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a case where we have talked about welfare, health, safety, operational lifestyle issues through all of the wing spreads. Certainly it has gained momentum probably in, what would you say, Dennis, the last two or three, there's a bit more focus on that.
Yes, sir.
And I think that it's a beat that's going to go on. Dennis mentioned the whole occasion of cancer in the fire service is a horrible problem. The business of decon, the decon research that we're doing really reflects some of the almost crazy processes that we have had in some way with not eliminating the exposure to the products of combustion.
Mm-hmm.
We wear dirty gear. We put it in the truck. We bring it back to the station. We wear it in the living quarters. There's getting to be some really forward thinking, let me call them that, because I certainly agree with them. I think a lot of us do. Is when you wear your turnouts on the fire ground, you put them in a bag, and they don't even go back in the truck until somebody washes them. Now, I know that's a radical departure from what we've done historically, but I think what they're beginning to look at, the epidemiological effect of those products of combustion, the hoods, huge occasion of thyroid cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we wear a hood for 10 years. Well, imagine the what's in that hood.
Sure.
So now you're getting to see fire departments that wear a hood one time, they throw it in the hamper, and they wash the thing. So, I mean, some of it is very practical, and it's very doable. Some of them are problems that we're going to have to work on, I mean, over a period of time. But I think that you can walk away from a lot of those discussions with a lot of ideas and a lot of direction and what you can do almost when you get home. So,
and, you know, if we're forecasting maybe to get the chief to react to this, just – watching in the short time I've been in our business, there'll come a day when there will be a receptacle that the used hoods will go in after their one-time use, and they'll go off to landfill as the member gets a brand new hood. I think the same with the rest of the turnout gear. I know that there's research ongoing to make it financially attainable. I hope nobody has apoplexy as I'm talking about it, because it sounds so extravagant in cost. But when you think about it, the hazmat experts always ask, how clean is clean? And the answer is, we never know. We never know until there's an impact, or that, in fact, we did not contract whatever disease we're trying to run from. So I do believe, because of programs just like this conference, we'll see disposable turnout gear one day. Maybe it's 20 years from now. But what do you think, Chief?
Well, you said it. I was laughing to myself when you said, how clean is clean? I think we know it could be a lot cleaner than it is.
Right. And it
isn't very clean now.
And so
we shouldn't argue about how clean is clean. We ought to say, how can we go to the next step of just simply making it cleaner?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Because we see what the effect is of it. I mean, you know.
Right. And then
I lived in an environment at a very, very busy engine company in an inner city in this country. Of course, Washington, D.C. and Northeast at Engine 10. And the turnout gear room was a little closet. I say a little closet. It was enough to hold about 40 sets of turnout gear. And it always smelled of smoke. And once you got past the smoke smell, it always smelled of body odor. And I mean strong, nasty body odor.
Right. Well, I think one of the other problems is that in volunteer houses or departments, we see that a lot of those volunteers actually take their gear home with them. I know that in my time, I used to put it in. Once I got beyond to the point where I didn't have to keep it on the rack and I was responding a lot to the station, I had it in the back of my car. not in the trunk, but in the back of the car. And then at night, I bring it inside and have it by the step so I could step into my boots and bunker pants and then, you know, throw the jacket on. So this was only back in the mid to late 70s and early 80s. And we still were, you know, at that time, we didn't even think of the carcinogens and other poisons that are in it. And I'm happy to say, by the way, that one of my guests coming up in the near future is Cindy L. on Twitter, if you know her. She heads up this group for firefighter cancer prevention and information. And she's agreed to be a guest on a future podcast of Five Alarm Task Force. And I also have another officer who just came on, a Chief Robert Fling. He has a campaign for Face Peace On to teach our firefighters that it is imperative when we're in those situations, those atmospheres, we must keep our masks on and breathe the right air that we can and not think that we're big heroes and we can take the mask off and work without it. That's almost taking us back to the days of the mid-60s when a lot of people didn't see the need for the mask and they were just coming out then. So why use them if we've always been able to fight fires without them? And we don't want to get back to that situation.
I'm trying to knock the smile off my face when you talked about we didn't worry about carcinogens back then. In 1970s, when I worked at Engine 10, I didn't know the word or would have understood what a carcinogen was, much less work towards defending it. So how far have we come? How far have we come?
Exactly. And this thing about firefighter suicides, I think that one of the big changes was that, and one of the other guests we've invited, haven't received an RSVP yet, is the fighting PTSD. And in the beginning, PTSD was only being used for our veterans who were coming back from Vietnam and other military things. It was not applied to the fire service until 1985 with the crash of the American Airlines DC-10 in Chicago. And it was only then that several of the outlying departments who came in to help the Chicago ARF group were going through a lot of the problems from what they found in sifting through the wreckage in the industrial zone that was just off the side of the airport where the majority of the crash debris was found. And there was a great story I read of a captain in one of those departments who did all his work that day, went home, slept, and the next morning got into his truck to go to shift, and he sat there for a half hour crying. And he couldn't stop himself from crying as he relived what happened. And it was then in this article that said that they were starting to see that PTSD was happening to firefighters as well. And we now know that all too well, unfortunately, because of 9/11. And it was like a stone thrown into a pond. The waves of PTSD just, you know, went out from that center and were broadcast all across the waters of firefighters all across the country. We're so broken up by the tragedy that we went through. And I think, and we've seen now the rise in the firefighter suicide. We see the articles in our trade magazines, which are addressing it and trying to hope. And on Twitter, on Facebook, saying, reach out to somebody. There's always somebody there to listen. Don't just think it's inside. So I think these issues that you've just talked about are so pertinent to today's news in the fire service. These are the headlines we see when we get the news updates in our email almost every day. We see these issues coming up. So I think it was brilliant of the conference to come up with this kind of information, and we'll make it available to every single firefighter, EMS, anybody involved, just by going online and reading it and taking the time to absorb what you've said.
Let me insert something here. And
sure.
We ought to maybe add this to this discussion. I live in a neighborhood where I've lived my whole life. I've lived in the house that I live in for over 50 years. About 2 years ago, the man and woman, who are both retired school teachers, both just beautiful people, one night in the middle of the night, they have a working fire in their home. And they barely escaped from that fire, from their home. And the Phoenix Fire Department responded and did the normal routine. They put the fire out. Serious, serious damage to their home. And they have lived here almost as long as we have. Anyway, I'll get to the point here. It took them this torturous year and a half to get their house repaired. It was well insured. But if anybody thinks that's an easy process, it certainly isn't. They had to move in with their kids and so on. Anyway, I'm going to make the point here. I was walking by their house the other day. I was going for a walk with my dog, and they were in the front yard, and I stopped and visited with them. They are, and I hadn't seen them while they were rebuilding their, in other words, while they were out of their house while it was getting fixed. They are dramatically different people today based on that experience. They look different. They act different. They relate to you different. And what I'm thinking, just in that experience, is that post-traumatic stress?
I would say absolutely. I would say there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely, Stephen, you're thinking. We are professionals. We do this as a job. We ought to be equipped and ready to do it. And we go through post-traumatic stress. What is the dynamic of post-traumatic disorder with our customers?
Sure.
What's the emotional impact on these two just absolutely beautiful people? I think they were both very accomplished. They have doctor's degrees. They're superintendents of fire districts. I mean, they're sophisticated people. They're not, I mean, they really are too. And they're very refined. I mean, they're very nice people. This is down to earth as they can be. They have a little bit of, as we would say in the fire station, a 1,000-yard stare when you're trying to engage them. And it was, to me, only because I've known them for so long, it's just heartbreaking when you see the effect of that.
Right.
And I'm wondering, we get on big red, you know, we come and we do our job and we get on big, like we should. I mean, hallelujah, what a great service and a great dynamic. We get on big red and we drive away and you got these people standing in a front yard. And you're thinking, wow. So again, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent here, but if you want to look at the whole post-traumatic dynamic in the community, we ought to get smarter about it and have better systems to deal with it, I guess is the point, maybe, or a point.
Right.
May I take off on that as well?
Please sure. do, Dennis. Please do.
You know, Chief mentioned something that just really hits home, and I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to sort of set up what occurred that day. It was a Sunday morning, absolutely a gorgeous day in Washington, D.C. I was the fire chief and had received a phone call that first we had gone to a working fire dispatch and then a second alarm. It was a row house in Upper Northwest off of Georgia Avenue, which was very close to my home at the time. So, of course, I attended. Unfortunately, at that alarm, we had two fatalities. There was a mother that had died, an elderly lady, but the mother of a gentleman that had died in the bedroom on the second floor. And once the son realized, a grown gentleman, that his mother was trapped upstairs, of course, he tried to make the staircase where he came to his untimely end. There were several pets, and the pets had been collected up and put in the family vehicle, well taken care of, fed and all that. I don't want to get off onto that tangent, but we did our best with what we could do, and we began to await for family members to arrive, which is to be expected. They did not live in this home. Well, the one gentleman gets there and is completely distraught, very verbal, struggling to get past the fire lines. Didn't do a very good job of identifying himself, but quite frankly, with his mother dead and upstairs and his brother on the staircase laying dead, I get it. I understood. Well, our police department began to restrain the gentleman because we didn't have tools available or ready to assist him. And, you know, I saw what was going on and immediately intervened and got a couple of paramedics and worked to calm him down and called for our pastors. And I'm thinking out loud, that could have just as easily been a situation where the police may have tased the gentleman. I can't imagine how that would have played on the 6 o'clock news locally or nationally. The gentleman did absolutely nothing wrong. He was in a phase of disbelief and stress that I'm glad I would never have to live through, in that my parents are long gone. And for that matter, so are all my brothers. And it just begs the question, we've got to be better prepared, just like you're saying, Chief. Yeah. And I think it is germane to the topics that came out of Wingspread. I don't think we're too far afield, because this is the type of thinking and discussion, Steve, that was held in Racine. And, you know, out of that case, we developed a program that we called Street Calls for that and for many other reasons, to deal with the psychological impacts that do occur, that the average lieutenant or captain moving a hose line, and God bless both him and her, probably aren't quite trained or equipped to deal with. So that is an area, Chief, that I think we really do need to explore.
And I think that's going to, with the recommendation that you're making and with some of the facts that we know are prevalent today in the industry, I think that will, hopefully we'll learn from that. The service will learn and they'll evolve. Again, to quote Chief Bruno, we will evolve and we will better ourselves to better serve not only the people by our prevention and putting the fires out, but to serve them in their whole picture of being able to serve our people properly when they go through a traumatic incident, such as a terrible fire or, God forbid, a serious accident or something like that. All right, we're going to take a break here from our second segment. We'll be back in just a few moments with our third segment. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the issues and some of the recommendations that we have coming up out of the Wingspread 6 conference. We'll be right back after a few words.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Are you a hoarder? There is a difference between poor housekeeping and what is considered a dangerous amount of clutter. Take a look at your surroundings. Is your home a fire risk? Could rescuers reach you in the event of an emergency? We know that hoarding fires are harder to fight. Firefighters must often climb over clutter or wade through items to find an ignition source. Searches really cannot be done in the traditional way. Firefighters may have a tough time getting inside due to blocked doors, but also may have a hard time getting someone out who is trapped inside. In extreme hoarding cases, windows and doors might be completely blocked. All that stuff provides a greater fuel load, which will burn hotter and faster. Remember, there is a difference between being a collector or being a hoarder. It's a great time to evaluate your situation and start on that spring cleaning today. And we're back with segment 3 of our podcast with our guests, Chief Alan Brunaccini and Chief Dennis Rubin, talking about the results of the Wingspread 6 conference held in Racine, Wisconsin this past summer. We've covered a few of the points, and we're going to go on to another one now that is quite a topic in the fire service today. Chief Brunaccini, would you take it away?
Well, one of the issues that we discussed at Wingspread, and certainly it's a widespread issue and project right now in many fire departments, it has to do with what is the next chapter in using EMS resources. And there's a couple of things, and there's certainly some examples, and I'm sure that Dennis, Chief Rubin, will share one excellent example of it. But there, in the current health care system, there is a component in it where they are trying to somehow help people who have had hospital stays in a way that will prevent them from having to go back in the hospital, nor to be readmitted in the hospital. So essentially what these programs involve is home health care, where some agency would visit that person periodically after they get out of the hospital to be certain that they're okay. In other words, they check on their welfare, and then they see that they're taking their meds to see if there's some other things they can do to support their recovery and so on. In other words, they're just a supportive kind of a service. Some fire departments are beginning to participate in that, and we're kind of working our way through trying to understand what is the best way of doing that. And we use, obviously, EMTs and paramedics who are in the fire department, but they're starting, a few fire departments are starting to get a higher certificate level of a practitioner to come and help us with that, like a physician's assistants and nurse practitioners and those sorts of folks. That's one of the issues. And another one that is kind of a new term in the fire service, and they call it a low acuity response program. And what they have done is they have triaged the calls that a fire department typically receives, and that there are many of those calls that don't require the response of a full company, in other words, a fully staffed engine or truck or whatever unit that is. And now what they're beginning to do is smaller vehicles, two-person staffing, less wear and tear on large pieces of apparatus, more appropriate, more maneuverable, more explainable, and so on, and obviously more cost beneficial too. So there's kind of a whole topical set of issues that we're beginning to experiment with and are probably going to get worked into the regular way that we do business. But Wingspread was a place where people who actually worked in organizations that were doing some of those things really offered some really practical examples. And that was really a pretty energetic and a pretty interesting discussion that I think really has a future to it too. Now, I know that when Chief Rubin was in D.C., he helped that system invent a unit that is exactly in what we're talking about here. And we'd be getting to tell us about that.
Chief, thank you. The last significant statement in Wingspread is that the United States Fire and Emergency Services must adopt its emergency medical resources in a more robust, integrated mobile healthcare system. And it's exactly what you've been describing. We had a problem in Washington, D.C. that was acknowledged by the mayor as well as the medical community of a lot of need for emergency medical responses. So much so we were having backups in emergency rooms. I'd never heard the term bordering used in the capacity that it was when I was there. And that's simply put, the patients that are in the hallways, lobbies, and other ancillary parts of the building and not being treated in an emergency room. So you can imagine the caution and concern that caused. What Mayor Finty allowed us to do was to put in service two vehicles that were not emergency response. We bought the newest and best soccer mom vans, and they were staffed with a physician assistant each, a paramedic each, and an EMT each, for a total of three persons per unit. Each of those groups were given the top 50 for a total of 100, but the top 50 911 callers. Some folks had called for assistance 300 times in a one-year window, so virtually every day or just about every day. With that said, they would have to make contact and produce a report as to what the status of that individual was and how can we prevent them from dialing those three magic numbers. We dollarized our response. That would be a paramedic engine, a paramedic ambulance, And then, of course, the initial hospital fees at about $3,500 per call per event. So, of course, we felt like the more calls that we were able to prevent from the system, the more financial resources we could direct that street call program. Well, the street call program found out a couple of really interesting things. First of all, there were a lot of sick people that we were dealing with. And in the level of sickness, it was either reoccurring chronic illness or it was things such as drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, as well as mental health issues. And instead of taking them to an emergency room, laying them out in the hallway or asking them to sit in a chair, saying goodbye and hoping for the best, we began to try to marry their needs to appropriate services. For instance, we would take folks to the dialysis center. What we found is another struggle that folks that are forgotten about in society have trouble with is transportation. And of course, the belief was if we took that person to a 3 p.m. Dialysis treatment, we would prevent the 3 a.m. response while they're unconscious, unresponsive, and in renal failure and cardiac arrest. So I think the members embraced it. We found that there were older paramedic members who really enjoyed delivering that level of care, and EMTs as well. And the physician's assistants were exactly that. They did not come from within the ranks. We went outside and hired them. And boy, they were just astronomical at their work. I would share one quick success story and then pitch it back to Steve. One of the individuals that would call almost every morning that had trouble breathing when the physician's assistant actually knocked on her door and broke the threshold. That was my mayor's motto, is that we want to be on the inside of the threshold to find out whatever types of problems are going on. And certainly in this case, it was a fire and emergency medical services problem. And the lady with trouble breathing, he asked her to bring her collections of medicines for this PA wearing a white doctor's like jacket with a stethoscope around his neck. No badge, no authority. It didn't appear like he was trying to butt in as a government entity, but simply trying to help her. And she brought the Advair inhaler that she had been using. And the physician's assistant looked at her and said, "No, ma'am, I want to see the medicines you're currently using." And she assured him, "Sir, this is what I'm using." And he said, "This inhaler has got 30 days of medication in it, and it's about a year and a half old." So what he was able to effectively do was to work with, we had a full-time assistant fire chief. I mentioned Dr. Jim Augustine. I threw a ringer into Wingspread. He was the medical director who worked full-time for the department and was able to issue her an updated prescription for her medications. We made certain that she had her medications, and to my knowledge, just about every day calling to go to the Washington Hospital Center by ambulance 11 or paramedic ambulance 11, I can't remember which one it was, she was able to not need that service anymore. So that's one of just a dozen or 20 or 50 episodic cases, Steve, that I could share with you how effective the program was. It was the right thing at the right place at the right time, and we directed the resources in a way that made the most sense and saved the most money.
Well, then there's no doubt that, you know, it would be great to have that set up as a model, that as more departments feel that they want to move in that direction. Because as a friend of mine up in Delaware said, we used to be a fire department that had an ambulance, and now we're an ambulance company that has a fire engine. But the point is that we've had to, over the last 15 to 20 years, we've had to move in that direction. We look at simply at the volume of our calls and the percentages of those that are EMS against our what we call our general fire calls. And they've skyrocketed. And oftentimes, as you just mentioned, people look at EMS as their doctor, their primary physician. And that's how they abuse the system, unfortunately. But this idea can certainly grow and for other departments. And I think if the department sets it up properly, following the model that you set up in D.C., Chief, with that they could show to the people who hold the strings of the funding for the department how they can actually save money in the long run by implementing this kind of a program as opposed to dispatching a full paramedic engine and ambulance to a call where it may not necessarily be required.
And I would say also, when you look at the possibility of liability of somebody waiting in the hallway of a hospital, not being treated or cleaned or fed or attended to, and then dying in that hallway, that lawsuit's about a $3 million event.
Oh, certainly.
And certainly the department will bear some of the responsibility, perhaps not all, but unfortunately Washington, D.C. had lived through that. And when the department built this program, the medical director, the paramedics, the EMS union, it was as strong a program as possible. And I think if Mayor Finty would have been reelected by now, instead of two, we would have had seven, one in each battalion operating, or perhaps more. But it was an absolutely incredible way of doing business. It saved a lot of money. It was the right thing with the right level of resources. And most importantly, it helped our folks, our people, our citizens. And I think that's the spirit of Wingspread significant statement number 14. Wouldn't you agree, Chief Brunacini?
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah. And I think that that's probably one of the many values of Wingspread. It has been a place that has incubated in the beginning some of those ideas, and then it carries those ideas out over a period of time to where they can be implemented in a more expansive kind of way, that they can be refined and so on. I mean, it's just a continuation of it. So when we say that it's a linear process, I think this is probably a really a good example of it.
Certainly, certainly. Well, I think you've given us so much information on the Wingspread Conference, what it stands for, how it began, where this past conference went in July. And I think we have an idea of what we can look forward to, God willing, in the next 10 years as we watch our services evolve and respond to the changes in society, the changes in government, the changes in population and things like that. Of course, one thing that's coming up is the auto drive vehicles, and I'm trying to think of how many calls we're gonna wind up responding on those when they may not work out in the initial release of them. But our society is changing all the time, and as providers of safety and teachers of safety, and I think that's one of the most important roles we have, is to be teachers and instructors to the public. Is that it's really our responsibility to learn from our, I won't say elders, but learn from our leaders, our instructors, and take their comments to heart and see what we can do to improve our situation and our service to the people that we serve, because they are why we do the job that we do. And I think we can never forget that point. And I think Wingspread 6 really underscores that. And can we let people know when it's going to be released on the internet, Chief?
Chief Bernicini, can I address
that?
Yeah,
please do.
Yes, sir. By the time this program is aired, the principals will have received their paper copies. They've been placed in the mail a few weeks ago. Once the principals receive their copy, again, the attendees, the dignitaries of the various associations and agencies, some of our political leaders, once they have received their copies, the release of the electronic version will be rapid and extensive. What we didn't want to happen is for someone to bring a copy to, let's say, someone like President Harold Schaeferger of IAFF, where he didn't get a chance to receive a copy respectfully and properly first. And that goes for all the fire service dignitaries. So the idea is that that'll take another week or less. Once everyone that is in that position of the top 500 leaders and again, people of dignitary, I don't know how to exactly describe that. I don't want to overstate it, but by the same token, not understate it. Once that occurs, it will be on the National Fire Heritage Center's website and dozens upon dozens of others of websites. There is a wing spread website that I'm sad to tell you I don't know the address. I know the address of the Wing Spread 6 Twitter. It's simply at Wing Spread VI, as in Roman numeral 6. But there won't be any problem getting access. I know that during one of the breaks you mentioned that you didn't see a whole lot about Wing Spread over a period of time, and being an active member of the fire service for almost 40 years yourself, how come you didn't? Well, I think Wing Spread has always been challenged by having a paper copy to release, to figure out who to send it to come up with the resources, which this year it's going to be about $2,500 to buy envelopes and stamps and get it mailed out. And there's no funding source for Wing Spread, by the way. I mentioned our great sponsors, and we thank each and every one of those. So that money had to be raised. It wasn't there waiting for anyone. So with that said, I think that was a barrier. And nowadays, with social media, with the ability to put it on websites, fire departments across the nation have been asking. Quite frankly, I think people are going to get tired of hearing about Wing Spread. So that's going to be the transitional change, as it were, where in the past it just did not exist. I think Chief Brunicini always talked about using smoke signals when he was in Phoenix. Engine 1 would have to fire up the grill out back to talk to Engine 2 or Engine 3. And those days are gone. Not forgotten, but gone.
Right, right. Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedules to join us on Five Alarm Task Force. Chief Brunicini, it is a pleasure to meet you, even if it's by telephone, and speak with you. I thank you for your leadership, your mentoring, your kind thoughts, and your constructive criticism of the fire service over the years. Thousands of us have looked to you and learned from you through that, and I'm sure we will continue with your work through the Wing Spread 6. Chief Rubin, I almost can call you friend already with our two broadcasts together and your support. It means a great deal to me, and I thank you very much for being willing to come back to the show and do this report for us. I just hope that our listeners will be many, our listeners will take it to heart, and our listeners will go forward with the new knowledge to make our service a better service, and to make us be able to make a better delivery to the people that we care for. And so once again, I thank you both. And anybody have any parting words for us? Okay. So.
Thank you, Steve. We truly appreciate the opportunity, my friend, and keep up the great work at Five Alarm Task Force Podcast. I think this is a great idea. And again, as I mentioned in the opening, just another opportunity for the nation to receive some leading edge, up to the minute, great training information. So thank you for your wisdom and foresight to put together this opportunity.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. And we'll be back with a few words just after this. Baby, it's cold outside. Those freezing temperatures may try your heating efforts, but don't let it try to break your safety efforts. Each winter, careless or unsupervised use of portable electric and gas space heaters cause thousands of fires and sadly take and injure many, many lives. However, you can fight those cold temps the safe way by following a few simple steps. Make sure your smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are working properly. If you don't have any or cannot afford any, please contact your local fire department. Never use candles or an open flame for heating, and never use your oven or stove for heating. Place room or space heaters away from anything that might easily catch fire, like curtains, tablecloths, etc. Make sure an adult is always around to supervise those heaters, and never allow children to play with them, and be sure not to leave matches or lighters where children may get a hold of them. Old Man Winter may be knocking at your door, but you can safely keep him away and keep your family warm safely. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed: excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune. and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. We have more exciting topics coming up in the next few weeks. We'll be discussing hoarding and what first responders may find on arrival, the new fire officer, leadership and community service, firefighter cancer, PTSD, and many, many topics more. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We're always looking for new guests with innovative and forward thinking. That's it for today's show. Thanks for tuning in. Stay safe, and let's be sure everyone goes home.